When you're juggling everyday life, carrying your faith isn't always easy. Introducing Journa, Premier's new devotional journaling app, created in partnership with World Vision. Each day, Journa gives you a Bible verse, a short reflection, a question to sit with, a written prayer, and space for your thoughts, all in one place, wherever you go. Find Journa in your App Store today, available on iOS and Android. Journa, an app to help you stay connected.
Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. It's Sunday evening. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jeff Lucas. Well, it's surely one of the most misquoted, misunderstood phrases from the teaching of Jesus. I'm talking about his statement, "Judge not that you be not judged." Some suggest that that means that if we follow Jesus, that means we'll never make a judgment about anything, and that any and all behavior is to go unchecked and unchallenged. Of course, that notion goes down really well in our culture, where people often say, "I've just got to be the best version of myself. I'm free to be me." And then if we, as followers of Jesus, critique anything or make a moral judgment, then others rush to suggest that we're being arrogant and judgmental, maybe being rather judgmental themselves. The reality is, of course, that we can and we will make judgments in life. It's unavoidable, and this is not the thing that Jesus warns us against doing. Consider all that's going on in the headlines at the moment around the Epstein files, the scandals, and all of this is happening because there is a judgment, a right judgment in our culture, that pedophilia is wrong, it's evil, and we judge that statement to be true. And of course, everyday life calls us to make judgments. We make hundreds of them, ranging from moral judgments that I've just talked about to simply stating an opinion. The meal I ate in that restaurant was stone cold. And then in the church, we're actually called to make judgments about prophecy, 1 Thessalonians 5, about teaching, whether it's good or false, 1 John chapter 4, as part of loving church discipline. We read about that in 1 Corinthians 5. And then in the next chapter, 1 Corinthians 6, we hear about judgment in matters of dispute between believers. So when Jesus says, "Don't judge," he's not referring to making moral judgments, ascetic judgments, legal judgments, scientific judgments. He's talking about judgmentalism. He's calling us to resist unjust judgment, where we jump to conclusions, where we deliberately try to catch people doing something wrong, where our judgments are based on our preferences. The judgment that we must turn from is a biased, premature, hypocritical judgment that seeks to correct others while choosing to remain oblivious to the planks in our eyes that we need to deal with first. We read about that in Matthew chapter 7. So tonight, let's talk about judgment and judgmentalism. We're talking about judgment and judgmentalism. I've talked about it before, but it bears repeating. We were out settling down for a treat, breakfast in a rather posh restaurant, and we were soaking up the ambience of the place. There was this gorgeous old fireplace, logs smouldering, emitting that wonderful smell of charred wood. The walls were bedecked with silk wallpaper, and waistcoated waiters dashed here and there with platefuls of steaming food. It was lovely. There was gentle background music, canned but well chosen, complementing the sedate atmosphere. But then suddenly everything changed, because the music shifted into a twinkly rendition of "Bar Bar Black Sheep," which played through in about 20 seconds and then just repeated and repeated again, and incredibly again. 10 minutes later, having heard the question to the aforementioned black sheep concerning whether or not it had any wool, and discovering once again that indeed wool was plenteous, 3 bags full, in fact, we felt rather restless, even agitated. Surely the CD, the MP3 player, the streaming had got stuck. Other diners were frowning, following the great British tradition of noticing that something was wrong, but not actually saying anything about it so as not to cause a fuss, but then looking forward to the opportunity of grumbling later on. 10 minutes later, the sheepish repetition was beginning to feel like a musical version of water torture, so I decided to raise the issue with a passing waiter. "Excuse me," I said, "can I just ask, what's going on with the music?" He tilted his head to one side, the strange posture of one who wants to communicate that they're listening intently, and he agreed, "Yes, sir, that is odd. I'll check." Off he went and restarted the player, only now there were two tracks playing simultaneously, a cacophonic collision between Bach and those irritating sheep. Other diners, emboldened by my inquiry of the waiter, moved into stage one of British complaining, which involves rolling one's eyes and sighing. The next stage would be full-on huffing and puffing, but we were not quite there yet. The waiter returned to our table, looking rather bewildered. But it was then that the awful, hideous moment came, and the memory of it makes me cringe even as I share it with you here. The waiter pointed down to the floor to a handbag owned by one of our little group. "That music, sir, it's coming from that bag. Your bag," he cried triumphantly, with the glee normally associated with a detective who's cracked a difficult whodunit case. And indeed, the music was emanating from that bag. Somehow a mobile phone had clicked onto a game app for small children, which was playing Bar Bar Black Sheep over and over and over again. Suddenly, the eye-rolling and sighing around the restaurant stopped to be replaced by chilly glares in our direction. I could feel the frost. I'd complained, but we were the source of the irritation. Frustrated by the repetition, we were blissfully unaware that we were the ones to blame. Guilty as charged, my lord. In telling a story that's reminiscent of Monty Python, Jesus painted a portrait of a hapless chap who runs around with a magnifying glass, mustard keen, to identify specks of sawdust in the eyes of others, but all along oblivious to the whacking great plank that sticks out from his own head. Apparently, this log in Jesus' day would have been the main support for a house, which would have made it about 12 meters long, a significant protrusion. This farcical scene is frequently played out, especially in churches. Fault-finding souls, eager to catch people doing or believing something that is suspect, patrol around searching for someone or something to correct. Sometimes they get together and form squadrons. When they find something that appears to be amiss, they pounce on it with an unseemly joy, thrilled by yet another opportunity to highlight a problem or see others fail. Ironically, when we do this, our unkind, cruel attitude might be far worse than the issue that we're determined to correct, but we can remain blissfully unaware of this. Hobbies can provide distractions, so perhaps some take up fault-finding and judgmentalism as a hobby in order to spare themselves the demanding discomfort of self-discovery. Peering at others through a magnifying glass is so much easier than staring at ourselves in a mirror. If we're in the habit of locating sawdust specks, perhaps it's time to focus more on what we're often blind to, that is, our own faults and foibles. Meanwhile, back at breakfast, the sheepish serenade was finally and hastily silenced. Calm was restored, but I still felt the need to depart in haste because the glares around the room continued. No one likes a picky complainer. "I think a rather huge apology to the staff is required," boomed a chap at the next table. And I complied, begging forgiveness from the grinning waiters. Who knows? If you've been a plaque-spouting, speck-hunting, picky, judgmental person, it might be that you are the cause of some grief. So perhaps in your life and mine, a rather huge apology might be required somewhere too. We're talking about judgment versus judgmentalism, and it's time for another confession. One of the ministers at our church irritates me. He's probably a nice enough chap, but I'm finding his preaching rather boring and he preaches a lot. Sometimes I groan when I know it's him again. I'm sure he works hard at sermon preparation and he probably sincerely wants to impact people for God. He tries really hard, peppering his talks with anecdotes and warm humour. But recently, I got to the point where I decided that if I had to listen to him preach just one more time, I'd end up breaking something. The trouble is, there's absolutely nothing I can do about it because the irritating preacher aforementioned is me. It's one of the drawbacks of a busy speaking ministry. I get to listen to myself a lot. When I'm home in Colorado, I often hear myself preach the same message four times over in just one weekend, the same outline, the same points, even the same spontaneous humor. It gets rather old hearing me. Recently, I shared my frustration with my ever-patient wife, Kay. "I preach so much, I get sick of the sound of my own voice," I muttered. She proffered a smile of quiet resignation, but her words didn't bring much comfort. "Yes, darling," she said, "I understand completely how you feel." So it came as a welcome relief to go to a church and for a change, hear somebody else preach. We decided to visit a local church that's from a denomination quite different from our own. There's no soft rock worship there, but the throaty tones of an ancient pipe organ. The smell of incense hangs heavy in the air, which presents me with the challenge of coughing reverently. And the minister has that sing-song parsonical voice. When it comes to style, it's Mars to our Venus. But as we made our way in through the ancient porch of the church building, I whispered a note to self. I love diversity in the church. Years of involvement in events like Spring Harvest have surely taught me that my way is not the highway, that I have so much to learn from Christians who express their faith in an unfamiliar style, unfamiliar to me at least. Our differences are to be celebrated and respected. I've surely learned that, or so I thought I'd learned that. Slipping into an unyielding wooden pew, waiting for the service to begin, I suddenly realized that I was irritated with myself again and I wasn't even preaching today. To my horror, I discovered that I was already anticipating that I would bristle and be judgmental about what was about to happen. I would surely tut-tut at the slightly out-of-tune organ. I'd be frustrated with that clerical voice. And I'd definitely be bored by the sermon, which I'd already decided would be desperately dull. I was warming up to be irritated and offended before the proceedings had even begun. What was wrong with me, I asked myself. The service began with a kind welcome. The singing got underway, and then it was time for the sermon. So I settled back and got ready to be frustrated by the tedium to come, but to my amazement and surprise, the talk, the sermon, it was brilliant, accessible, biblical, and engaging. The minister spoke with clarity and confidence. It was outstanding. But here's the part that I'd rather keep to myself. But as we're talking about judgment and judgmentalism, again, I have to confess. As we navigated our way through the final hymn, the organ pitch perfect, I realized that I was actually disappointed to not be disappointed. How sick is that? I'd gone to church anticipating that I wouldn't like it, and then I felt a bit deflated because my prejudices had not been confirmed. I was offended because I had no reason to be offended. The service over, we filed out, and I shook the minister's hand and thanked him for such a wonderful sermon. There's a certain myopia that comes with a critical and a judgmental heart. We decide that we don't like somebody or we come to a quiet negative conclusion about the church we attend, and then the filtering begins. When we see a fault, we zoom in on it, triumphantly holding it up as Exhibit A, evidence that proves we're in the right, which is where we like to be. Or, like me, we book our tickets for a seat in the offended judgmental section well in advance, but then we ignore or minimize the good things that that person or church does, or even bristle when someone that we've tagged as suspect actually does something that's great. Yikes, we can't have that. It implies that we might actually be wrong. And so I'm back to being irritated with that minister at our church again, the one called Jeff. That's me. And it's not just because I get to hear my voice a lot, but because I don't want a pompous, judgmental heart. This much is certain. If I hear me preach a sermon on being negative, critical, judgmental, I'll be the first in line to respond. As we've been thinking about judgment versus judgmentalism this evening, I find myself asking the question, why do some of us get to be so judgmental? Is it possible that we're really quite unhappy with ourselves? And so in order to deflect from the guilt or shame that we feel about our own misgoing, and so in order to deflect from examining ourselves and considering our own shortcomings, we prefer to just point the finger and rather enjoy noticing that others around us are not all that they could be. But this is not only really rather sad, but again, as Jesus teaches us from the specks and planks picture that he paints, this leads us into a place of self-deception, so preoccupied with the failings of others that we become oblivious to the huge issues that might be developing in our own lives. Perhaps this week we'd do better to ask the Lord to show us us. And perhaps as we have a fresh realization about our own shortcomings and yet the love of God for us in the midst of those, we'd be less willing to point the finger at others. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.
When you're juggling everyday life, carrying your faith isn't always easy. Introducing Journa, Premier's new devotional journaling app, created in partnership with World Vision. Each day, Journa gives you a Bible verse, a short reflection, a question to sit with, a written prayer, and space for your thoughts, all in one place, wherever you go. Find Journa in your App Store today, available on iOS and Android. Journa, an app to help you stay connected.